Spirit, God's anointed one. Once again, grateful to Yeshivat Or Chaim for giving us the opportunity to hold this in our home Beit Midrash here, as well as the Rashi Shemayim for the Tanakh that we are all using. And this session is sponsored by Dr. Ellen Warner, Dr. Jeff Lipton, in honor of the December/Tevet birthdays of their children, Eran and Nechama. Thank you very much. All right. So, Cyrus, God's anointed one. Take a look, please, on your sheet. It says number 11, it means number 1. We had, I guess, a little bit of a glitch there when these source sheets were concatenated. This comes from remarks made, as you see here, by Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu before a bilateral meeting back in March with President Trump. Please leave all politics and opinions out of this. I'm not interested. What I am interested in is the quote. I want to tell you that the Jewish people have a long memory, Prime Minister Netanyahu said. This is when they were announcing the moving of the embassy to Yerushalayim. So I want to tell you that the Jewish people have a long memory. So we remember the proclamation of the great King Cyrus the Great, Persian king. 2,500 years ago, he proclaimed that the Jewish exiles in Babylon can come back and rebuild our temple in Jerusalem. We remember 100 years ago, Lord Balfour, who issued the Balfour Proclamation that recognized the rights of the Jewish people in our ancestral homeland. We remember 70 years ago, President Harry S. Truman was the first leader to recognize the Jewish state. And we remember how a few weeks ago, President Donald J. Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Mr. President, this will be remembered by our people throughout the ages, and as you just said, others talked about it, you did it. Okay. Comparison of a modern president with Cyrus the Great as a friend to the state of Israel. And again, please leave out any modern politics. I don't want to go there. Take a look at the next source, the second one. This is an article, the biblical story the Christian right uses to defend Trump. The comparison comes up frequently in the evangelical world. Many evangelical Christian speakers and media outlets compare Trump to Cyrus, a historical Persian king who in the 6th century BCE conquered Babylon and ended the Babylonian captivity, a period during which Israelites have been forcibly resettled in exile. This allowed Jews to return to the area now known as Israel and build a temple in Jerusalem. So here's our big question. Why was Cyrus such a friend to the Jews? Because he was. The year 539, by the secular chronology, about 165 years later, according to our traditional Midrashic chronology, he fights the war that we mentioned in the previous shiur, defeats the Babylonians, and in his very first year in office, tells the Jews, you can go home, you can build yourself a temple, and not only that, we're going to send presents with you to underwrite it. Take a look, please, in your Tanakh on page 1815, 1815, the first parak, the first chapter of the book of Ezra. It's also the last sentences of Divrei Hayamim, but here we get more of the story. Look at this. In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, Bishnat Achat Lekoresh Melech Paras, the first year of Cyrus, upon the conclusion of Hashem's prophecy by the mouth of Yirmiyahu, meaning the end of the 70 years that had been predicted, Heir Hashem es Ruach Koresh Melech Paras. Hashem awakened the spirit of Cyrus the Persian king. Vayaver kol b'chol malchuso. He passed the message through his entire empire. V'gam b'michtav. And he put it in writing as well. Why does putting it in writing matter? What is putting it in writing matter? Final. It's final, but more than that, this is a Persian king. What do we know about laws that are put in writing in the Persian Empire? You can't revoke them. That actually may not be entirely true. Read through Sefer Ezra and you find kings revoking things other kings did. Nonetheless, at least Ahasuerus thought, and in general we find support for it, that whatever is, as it says in Megillat Esther, Kichtava Shenichtava Shem HaMelech HaNachtom B'Tabad HaMelech, Ein LaHashiv. Written and sealed with the king's seal, cannot be revoked. So he puts this in writing. What is this? Sentence 2. Ko Amar Koresh Melech Paras. This is a decree of Cyrus. Kol Mamlechos HaAretz Nasan Li Hashem Elokei HaShamayim. He uses the name Yud, Hey, Vav, and the letter Hey. He uses that name of God. God has given me all of the empires of the land. The Gemara in Megillah says he's just boasting. He doesn't really control all the empires. That happens later on, the 127 lands. Nonetheless, we'll give it to him. All of the lands Hashem has given me, Hashem the God of the heavens, because he gave me the whole earth, so I guess God is God up in the heavens. That's Ibn Ezra's explanation of that line. V'hu fakad alai livnos lo bayis b'Yerushalayim asher b'Yehuda. He, this God, has commanded me, Cyrus, to build a house for him in Jerusalem, which is in Judea. Mi vachem b'kol amo. Who from his entire nation, Yehi Elokav Imo, may his God be with him, V'yal Yerushalayim Asher B'Yehuda, he will go up to Jerusalem that is in Judea, V'yiven es beis Hashem Elokei Yisrael, and build the house of Hashem God of Israel, Hu Elokim Asher B'Yerushalayim, the God who is in Jerusalem. And anyone who remains anywhere that he lives, the people who dwell there, the non-Jewish population, should elevate this person with money, with property, with animals, and gifts for the temple in Jerusalem. Why in the world, you're Joe Persian, are you going to give gifts to the Jews to go back to their land and give and build a temple there? Well, you're going to do it because Cyrus said so. But what's the thought process? So Rashi says they benefit when we bring karbanot. When we bring offerings, they profit from it. That's one possibility. The Dot Mikra edition offers the suggestion that they believed in our prophecies. We're going to come back to that. There's actually a more technical version of this decree that shows up later on in Sefer Ezra, in chapter 6, sentences 3 to 5. And there may have been more to the document originally than this, but we don't have it in Sefer Ezra. But that's the decree of Cyrus. And everybody responds. Take a look at sentences 5 and 6. Vayakumu Rashei Ha'avot Yehuda u'Binyamin. The leaders of Yehuda and Binyamin. Yehuda and Binyamin are the dominant tribes who remain. There are others there. It's not like everybody who remains is from Yehuda and Binyamin. The Medrash and Seder Olam Rabbah notes that there had to be other tribes represented based on the censuses that we'll see later on in the book. But Binyamin and Yehuda are the dominant ones. So, their leaders get up there with the Kohanim and Levim, and sorry, L'chol he'ir Elokim esrucho, all those whose spirit God had moved, la'alos livnos es beis Hashem b'Yerushalayim, to go build the house of God in Jerusalem, v'chol sevivoseihem, and all around them, chizku bideihem b'chlei chesed b'zahav, everybody around them gave them silver and gold, property, animals, everything. They all volunteer, they all give, they all donate. And then Cyrus acts further. Sentence 7. I alluded to this in the previous year when I talked about Achashverosh drinking from the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash. Achashverosh doesn't have the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash anymore. Because look at sentence 7. V'amelech Koresh hotzias klei Beis Hashem. Koresh, Cyrus, already took out the vessels of the house of God. Asher hotzi Nebuchadnezzar b'Yerushalayim. That Nebuchadnezzar had taken from Jerusalem. By the name of Beis Elohav. And that he, Nebuchadnezzar, had put in his temple. And Koresh takes out these vessels via this fellow Mithridates, who's the officer in charge, gives them to Shesh Batzar, who is one of the leaders of the return to Israel, and then we get a whole list of what is returned, and you can see it there in sentences 9 to 11. Hakol ha'alah Shesh Batzar, im ha'alos ha'galami bavali Yerushalayim, Shesh Batzar brings it home. I think I gave you a link. Yeah, in source number 16 on your sheets, I gave you a link to a shiur I once gave on the return of the vessels and its significance, because there's a whole arc associated with these vessels, but it's beyond the scope of what we're covering in this half hour. So, the vessels are returned. Parenthetically, take a look for a second at the list of the vessels that are returned. What's missing from the list? Menorah, good.
Wine cups.
Wine cups? What do you mean wine cups?
So why said that
he drank from... Right, yeah, well, no, we didn't have wine cups in the temple, though.
So what kind of...
So he had to be... Ahasuerus is a problem, but in terms of what Belshazzar drank from, like we talked about in the previous shiur, he had to be drinking with the mizrakim, the ladles that they used to hold other liquids. They didn't drink wine in the temple. So that's part of the question. Go to the shiur that I gave you the link for in number 16, and then you can hear what I had to say about that. But I don't want to take up time in this shiur for it. But here's your story. I'm sorry. So I started a point. We're missing the menorah from this list. We're missing the aron. We're missing the shulchan. Beit HaKahuna, maybe he doesn't have. It's gold and silver that he has. What we're Urim V'Tumim, right. We're missing all of these special vessels. This is one of the bases for the Gemara in Yuma, which says that we're missing all of those in the beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash, the second temple. They're not there. Cyrus didn't have them. Nebuchadnezzar didn't have them. What happened to them? So one Gemara suggests that Yoshiyahu hid them away. There are different explanations for it. The movies have been made about it. Someone sent me a link to an article a few weeks ago suggesting that they're in Ethiopia. Okay. But the point is not to get caught up in that. But look what Cyrus does. Cyrus is giving us everything we could possibly want, vihoter, and more. How do you understand that from a historical perspective? I understand as a Jew. I'm reading Tanakh and I see a story. Okay. But how does one understand a Persian king, fresh off his conquest of Babylon, sending us home with gifts and saying, now please build a Beit HaMikdash for Hashem Elohim, your God? So there's one view, historically, that says the Jews made this up. Come on. The whole story's got to be fake. And many people took this position for a very long time, until a key archaeological discovery in 1879, which demonstrated that it's not so. We're going to talk about that discovery shortly. But since then, since that discovery, they've come to accept that Cyrus permitted our return and endorsed construction of the Beit HaMikdash, and then they argue with parts of the record and say, come on, it can't be that the non-Jews would support our return. For an interesting discussion of this, I refer you to the article I quote here in source number 17 by Elias Bickerman. Since there was a return from the captivity under Cyrus, the king must have issued a proclamation summoning the exiles to go back to Jerusalem. But it's another question whether the text of the proclamation is trustworthy as given by the chronicler, or has been more or less altered from its original form by the hagiographer. He believes that we touched it up to make it sound more favorable to us. That's one school of thought. Second school of thought, entirely opposite extreme. Cyrus, Koresh has accepted the God of Israel. Because you go back earlier in Tanakh, and you find that there's a history here, and that's what I referred to in my title when I said Cyrus is God's anointed one. We need to go back to the earlier Nevi'im, the earlier prophets. First of all, we've already seen, I already referred you to it, in source number 18, I give you the references, we're not going to open them up right now. But Yirmiyahu predicted a 70-year galut, a 70-year exile for us. But go back before Yirmiyahu. Go back to the Nevi Yeshayah, to Isaiah. Go to page 1033, please, in your Tanakh. That's how you know that he is earlier than Yirmiyahu, because he appears earlier in your Tanakh. He's on page 1033 instead of page 1133. Page 1033 to page 1035 is such a remarkable prophecy from Yeshayah. Look at this prediction that he makes. We're going to look at very closely here, Yeshayah Perek Mem Dalet, chapter 44, sentence 24. That's where we're going to begin. Ko Amar Hashem Goalecha V'Yotzercha Mibaten. So declares God, your Redeemer. Yeshayah speaking to the Jews. The one who formed you from the womb. He says, Anochi Hashem Osekol, I am God who makes all. Notesh Shamayim Levadi, I extended the heavens when I was all alone. There was nothing else in the universe. Roka Haaretz Meiti, I stretched out the land. Me Pharaoh Sos Badim Kosmim Yaholel, I make of the sorcerers fools. Meishiv Chachamim Achor, I turn all of your wise men back. Datam Yisakel, I make them foolish. All of your predictors, all of your gods, all of their wise men who try to predict the future, they don't know what they're talking about. Make him devour Abdo. God upholds the words of his servant. Vatsas malachav yashlim. The counsel of his agents he will make whole. Haomer li Yerushalayim tushav. God declares of Jerusalem that it shall be settled. Ulaarei Yehuda tibanena. That the cities of Judea should be built up. V'charvaseh akomeim. I will build up the ruins of Yerushalayim. Haomer latzulah charavi. I say of the depths of the sea that they should be dried up. Narosayich ovish. I will dry up the rivers in order to bring back my exiles across them. He says that elsewhere. And then the key sentence. This God who declares all, who predicts all, Ha'omer lechoresh ro'i, v'chol chefzi yashlim, the one who says of Cyrus, he is my shepherd. He will complete all that I desire. V'le'mor li Yerushalayim tibaneh ve'echal tibaseh, to say to Yerushalayim, it shall be built up, the sanctuary shall be established, ko amar Hashem l'mshicho l'choresh asher echzakti bimino. So says God to his anointed one, to Cyrus. I have held on to his right hand, l'rad l'fanav goyim, to put the nations before him for his control. Masnei Malachim Achateach, I will weaken all the kings before him. Liftoch lefanav dvasayim usharem usharim lo yisageru. I'm going to open up the doors and the gates before him. Ani lefanav eleich. Hashem says, I'm going to walk before Cyrus. This is a beautiful, beautiful nivuah, beautiful prophecy. I'm going to open up everything for him. Jump to Pasuk Daled, sentence 4. Leman avdi Yaakov Yisrael bechiri. For the sake of my servant Yaakov. For the sake of Israel, my chosen one. Ve'ekro lecha b'shem. I call you Cyrus by name. I named you. You don't know me. Ani Hashem ve'ein od. Dot dot dot. That is God calling his shot. Now, for those of you who were here last year when we did Tanakh in a Day, and I gave the introduction to Yeshaya, I talked about the fact that, no surprise, skeptics will postdate this passage and say, this has to be a different, later Yeshaya. This can't be the Yeshaya who is speaking during the period of the first Beis Hamikdash. And I can understand why you'd want to say that. After all, Yeshaya never met a Persian. You're talking about a prediction of a Persian who's going to come along and defeat the Babylonians. Yeshaya hasn't even seen any Babylonians. Yeshaya is before all of this. In Yeshaya's day, the Assyrians are the big bad. The Babylonians haven't come along and destroyed the Assyrians yet, let alone the Persians coming along to beat the Assyrians. So I understand why this is difficult for people to swallow, but that's why they call it nevuah. This is prophecy. God is involved. This isn't about somebody reading the newspapers and coming up with a prediction. If you want more information about that, take a look at source number 20 where I gave you a link to my introduction to Yeshaya from that Tanakh in a Day program. But this is really important. If I take the second point of view of what happened, Cyrus has accepted this. Now, the Dad Mikra edition of Yeshaya has a very interesting presentation of this issue. I think it's Amos Chacham is the editor, if I remember correctly. And he floats the idea that Yeshaya wrote this prophecy down, but hid it. Because we find within Sefer Yeshaya that he is told to write certain things on scrolls and give them to his students. In other words, if you are a random Jew in the days of Yeshaya, you don't know about this. You don't know anything about a prediction about a king named Cyrus who's going to rise up for the Persians. Who are Persians? Who are Cyrus? I don't know. You actually wouldn't be familiar with this. This is passed down by his students until it is time to divulge it. And that helps deal with some of the weirdness of having this kind of a prediction. But this school of thought says Cyrus finds out about this. And he says, that God predicted me. And therefore he buys into it. And it fits, because there are all sorts of parallels between what Cyrus does and Paro's decision to let us leave Egypt, which was also an acknowledgement of Hashem. That's a major theme in Yeshaya in general, the parallels of Yitziat Mitzrayim, the exodus from Egypt, and our return to Israel under Cyrus. The whole idea of the foreign king recognizing God and sending us out, the idea of assistance from the people around us. Right? Remember what Moshe said. wrath of your neighbors, and they are going to give you wealth to take with you. That's what's happening over here. And it fits the language of Cyrus. It certainly sounds religious. He says, Hashem, your God, gave me this land. He's not talking about Ahura Mazda, the Persian god. He's talking about ours. So that's your second approach. And then there's a third approach. And the third approach is that Cyrus is a smart, strategic politician. And here we come back to the archaeological discovery. Look at your sheet, source number 21. There's this neat picture of something called the Cyrus cylinder. This is a small clay cylinder. It's less than 1 foot long. Discovered in 1879 in Babylonian ruins. The text on it is Akkadian cuneiform, so even if I blew this up to a larger size, you wouldn't be able to read it. I don't know that. Maybe somebody here can read Akkadian cuneiform. I take that back. I apologize. So the picture is off of Wikimedia. You can they actually have a few different pictures there, so it's copyright free. You can read it. You can send it to your friends, and that's fine. What this barrel inscription says is that Cyrus is, after defeating the Babylonians, restoring Babylon, and that he is going to support the temples of the Babylonian god Marduk. Because Marduk has rejected the Babylonian king. He mentions Nabonidus, who we mentioned in the previous class. And Marduk, the Babylonian god, has chosen me as his anointed one to rebuild his temples. This isn't about us. This is about Babylon. But that's the strategy. And it makes a lot of sense. Take a look at source number 22 from Professor Lucas Schultz. Good public relations, what Persian propaganda tells us about the Nehemiah memoir. Inscriptions ranging from the first Persian king Cyrus through Artaxerxes, Artaxasta in the book of Nehemiah reveal elements in common in both Babylonian and Egyptian texts. The Cyrus cylinder, which is what you saw in 21, describes a Babylonian god Marduk choosing Cyrus to rule kindly over the Babylonians as king of Babylon. This inscription demonstrates important Persian propaganda innovation. They use the language, in this case Babylonian cuneiform, inscription style, foundational cylinders that have been used for centuries, the local gods, Marduk and Nabu, the local royal title, king of Babylon, of their subject peoples. They're using all of the language that would have had religious significance for the people they conquered. No previous kings in the ancient Near East used this combination of methods. Chapters 40 to 55 of the book of Yeshaya depict a similar image of Cyrus in a Judean religious context. God gives Cyrus authority over Judah and the nations, and Cyrus is even given the royal title of Messiah. In other words, this was a strategy, and it makes a lot of sense. Right? If you conquer a land, and you present yourself as the new owner of the land, right? Under new ownership. What are you asking for? What the Romans found every time they tried to conquer us, right? You're asking for revolt. You're asking for people to try to throw you off. But for a long time, that's what people did. Then the Assyrians came up with a different tactic, right? Population transfer. We'll conquer people and we'll move them. And if we swap them around, they won't have roots in the area. They won't have something to fight for. They're not going to fight us off. But Cyrus says, it's a lot easier. Just be their friend. All you really want from them is taxes anyway. So listen, you control them. You make nice to them. You say, your God has anointed me as his special leader. Right? And then they'll like you. And of course they'll pay you taxes, because they like you very much, because you rebuilt their temple, you're the anointed one of their gods, you gave them support. Cyrus is making a smart political decision. That's the third way to look at it. Three approaches. One, we made this up in order to make it fit our narrative. Two, Cyrus is acting religiously. Three, Cyrus is a smart strategic politician. Well, what's the reality of Tanakh? The simple answer is that view number two and view number three are both correct. They're both correct. Tanakh is showing us, go all the way back to the Shir from 9 a.m., Tanakh is showing us God manipulating a king. That's what we are seeing. Hashem does it all the time. He does it directly with Paro. He does it directly with Nebuchadnezzar. He does it indirectly as well. Yirmiyahu has him indirectly influencing Nebuchadnezzar. I gave you the reference in source number 23 on your sheet. that Hashem manipulates Yirmiyahu says Hashem manipulates Nebuchadnezzar to get him to conquer the sinful nations of the region. And you actually see it here in Yeshaya's prediction on page 1033, chapter 45 in Yeshaya, sentence 4. Go back and read the sentence again and you'll see it. Hashem says, Leman Avdi Yaakov Yisrael Bechiri, for the sake of my servant Yaakov, for the sake of my chosen one Israel, Vo'ekra lecha bishmecha, I called the shot, God says. I named you, Cyrus. Achancha? Velo yedatani. Yes, we borrow that phrase in Anan Zmiros, for those shuls that say Anan Zmiros. Achancha velo yedaticha, right? It's borrowed from here. But Achancha, I named you, Cyrus, but you don't know me. Hashem is moving Cyrus, but Cyrus doesn't know that he's being moved. He thinks that he's being a smart politician. So that it said in the beginning of the prediction of Ezra, Heir Hashem et ruach koresh. Hashem awakened the spirit of koresh. Hashem gets him to do it. Take a look at source number 24 from Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. Regarding the king of Assyria, he quotes you a passage from Malachim Bet. I will place a spirit in him and he will return to his land. That's Sancheirev. Regarding Cyrus, God awakened the spirit of Cyrus to allow Israel to ascend to Jerusalem. In all of these verses, the spirit is not the intellectual foundation, but the force moving the will to a deed that is ethically good or bad. That's a bad translation of the German. Not that I know German, but I know when I see it. It's a bad translation of the German. What he's trying to say here is this. I think it's actually not even from the German. I think I translated that from the Hebrew, which was a translation of somebody else from the German. So it's even further removed. So let's explain what he's saying. What he's saying here is this. God does not give Cyrus the intellectual foundation. Hashem doesn't plant a message in the brain of Cyrus, send the Jews back. Cyrus comes up with that all on his own. That intellectual piece, that's his. What Hashem gives him is the force moving the will to a deed. Hashem says to him, yeah, go do it. That's good. He encourages Cyrus. He makes Cyrus feel good about what he is doing. He inspires Cyrus to move ahead with the plan. And he encourages him to have the non-Jewish neighbors around us support us as well, to give us the confidence to realize we are reenacting Yetziat Mitzrayim. We are reenacting the Exodus. Cyrus thinks he's doing it himself and that he's just being a smart politician. But in fact, Hashem is moving the pieces. And again, it takes us back to what I said in the overview 12 hours ago, which is, we can't read Tanakh with the God perspective, because we don't know what Hashem knows. As the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah learned when they tried to say that Shlomo doesn't make it into Olam Haba, Hashem says, I'm sorry, that's not your decision, that's my decision. You don't have enough information to work with. We can't read it with the perspective of the figures in Tanakh either. We don't know their relationships. We don't know their private lives. We get 4 or 5 events max from somebody's life and we think we know them. We don't really know them. All we have is our own perspective, the perspective of the reader, to learn the halachic lessons, the ethical lessons, the practical lessons from people who seem to us to be heroes or villains based on the way we perceive what they do. That's how we labeled everybody a red H and a green V, or the other way around? I don't know. They got H's or V's based on the way that we perceive their actions and what we learn. If someone seems like somebody who presents a positive message, like we should emulate, then they get an H. They're a hero. If somebody presents a message that we look at and say, no, definitely don't do that, then they get a V, because then they're a villain. But the key takeaway here with Cyrus is to look for the divine hand that's controlling events around us. To gain that perspective that you have here, to understand. Cyrus thinks he's doing this, but Hashem is making him actually be the one to do it. To look for that in the world around us is a major theme all throughout Tanakh. Thank you so much for participating. Thank you for holding out to 9 o'clock.